airport, and you may not. Hi, welcome to Kudzu Vine. We got Vernita live from Chicago and the O'Hare Airport, I believe. Vernita,
yes,
talk about the Daily Kos convention.
Okay, well, I came out for my first yearly Kos convention, which is their second convention. And it was definitely an experience since, you know, I'm all about the Georgia, all about the Georgia politics. So that was definitely a different experience than walking in. So because most, what, 99% of everyone there are mostly on the national blog. So I felt a little lonely there until we had our Southern Caucus meeting, which was a great dialogue with seven different states talking about local issues and how local blogs help influence and recruit and endorse candidates and what things we can do more and how when national organizations come into the southern states, they don't quite understand southern candidates and trying to push a 100% progressive statement down. So that part was good. It was great meeting a lot of people from all across the country and a lot of good people that are doing some good work. But the facility was horrible. I mean, I don't think I've walked that much. I can't even remember the last time I walked that much. Legs hurt, feet hurt, back hurt. But, yeah, the diversity was a major issue. There wasn't any. I mean, there was very few. And, you know, women were outnumbered. There were maybe 50 or 60 African-Americans, probably about 30 of other races. So... I don't think that they actually, it reflects, it might reflect the blogosphere, but it definitely doesn't reflect the country. And we had some great speakers. I learned a lot in my DNC courses.
Yes, so the DNC actually sponsored coursework.
Yeah, they actually came and talked, and they did about five or six different programs. And it was really good. It was good. It seems like there's been a huge turnover in the last 2 to 3 months at the DNC. I think because a lot of people went and worked on campaigns.
Yes.
That I was really happy meeting the new political director, or I'm not sure if that's his official term, but the guy who's going to be handling all the ground game for the DNC. He really knows his stuff. He's got a lot of experience with the AFL-CIO. He's got strong recommendations, and he's all about, you know, productivity now.
Yes, well, I mean, and well, just out of curiosity for what we're doing, I know a lot of the blogosphere convention is based in the print or typing format, but what I know that I noticed that they had on Blog Talk Radio some live, you know, radio shows from the convention. Was there anything about what we're doing with the audio?
Oh, yeah, that was pretty funny. Blog Talk Radio had an exhibition area, so I walked past a guy, and he's like, oh, do you know about Blog Talk Radio? I'm like, dude, I do a show every Sunday. He's like, no. I'm like, yeah. So he thought that was cool. And there aren't that many Blog Talk Radio political shows across the country.
Yes, I think, and I think it's real funny. Most of your typed or just traditional blog media is more democratic. But then if you look across the spectrum of Blog Talk Radio, there's more conservative shows. So, I mean, and that's probably good for us. That gives us more of an angle on the market, if you will.
Yeah, and it was really interesting because, no, I mean, I don't think I met anyone who was using the medium out of 1,400 people.
Wow, and this is of your group of, like, 16 folks?
No, out of the 1,400 people that were there.
Oh,
1,400.
I think you said 14 people. And I
no, 1,400 people. I didn't hear anyone really talk about using Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, I know, was it MyDD, Direct Democracy? I know they have a show, but... It's not something that's, you know, well-developed, but I'm sure it's coming. It's the next phase, and we're, I guess, leading it, not to brag too much on ourselves. Well, who else from Georgia was there? I'd heard a few other people from Georgia were going to the convention. So
actually, there were 11 people from Georgia, and I think I only knew 4 people, which was quite shocking.
Well, tell us those names in case we know them.
There was Ann Rose. I've heard of her, but I didn't really – that was my first time actually meeting her. And there was a couple from – Savannah, that does a lot of work for candidates, working on congressional races, and they were a lovely couple, and they were, you know, were saying they needed help in Savannah, and there was 2 guys from Marietta, that blog mostly on the national blog.
Yeah.
And there was one guy from Gwinnett. And Steve Deek went, and Melanie Gu and her husband went. But, yeah, there were people there that, you know, it was weird having to come to Chicago to meet Georgia bloggers.
Well, certainly. And now, there have been some Georgia-like conventions of this nature, the podcast convention, which podcasting is obviously different, but somewhat the same realm. I guess it's some of the same communities in a Georgia level. But and just out of curiosity, I know that Daily Kos is a progressive blog, but were there any conservatives that just wanted to learn from the master, if you will?
No, if they were, they sneaked in. But Fairtax.org was actually a sponsor. That kind of threw me for a loop.
Yes, I saw that some of their, you know, not every sponsor they had was, you know, pure, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But they didn't have a booth or anything. I think they planned that purposely not to get chastised.
Yeah, you can do that better on the move, float around and whatnot.
So they had the presidential debate. I mean, the first thing was our leaders couldn't come because, you know, the House of Congress is still in session.
Yeah.
So everyone was kind of bummed out about that. But then there was the debate, and there wasn't really anything dramatically different from watching it on TV.
Hey, Bernita, among the six candidates that were there at the thing, which one was best received, do you think?
I think John Edwards was, because he just said the right keywords. Whether they had something substantial behind them, he said the right keywords. It was sort of, my feelings, like, after the first 10 minutes, was like, it was like a puppet show. Like, they would say the right keywords, and people, like, jump up and clap their hands. And, you know, the questions weren't really in-depth. It wasn't really hard. It was sort of the same questions we've heard before. So, yeah, I think John Edwards and Bill Richardson.
Yes, and Bill Richardson, is he picking up momentum in the blog community, do you think?
Yes. I think this was a good forum for him. I mean, he just was the best. He started off when they asked him the first question, he gave that Bill Richardson look like, I was like, Lord, don't let him have one of those kind of debates. And then he just swung into action, and he was really good.
Yeah.
I don't know what happened to Obama. I mean, he honestly did not wake up or seem to wake until 90 minutes into the debate.
Yes, and was the debate covered on any kind of broadcast media?
Yeah, I believe it was on Ustream, and, you know, every channel, every major station was there. I think it was on Ustream, and I believe that they're on the Yearly Kos site. There's a copy of it.
So it's not like C-SPAN or anything like that covered it?
No, I believe every major station covered it.
No, I mean, but C-SPAN.
Every major outlet.
Covered it wire to wire. I mean, you know, it's obviously some of the news stations probably had clips of it, but did any source like C-SPAN turn on the cameras and cover from the start of the debate to the end of the debate?
I don't know. There was just tons of TV cameras. There was just tons of cameras.
Yeah. Okay.
There was, you know, lots of banks of cameras and cameramen jockeying for positions. That was kind of funny.
Yes. Now, what would you say the best thing you learned was?
The best I learned was my discussions with individuals was probably the best. Like, the group I was with, the Chicago 17, was just an awesome group of people. I learned a lot more about the immigration issue from a personal standpoint and what other states were doing to address immigration issues. I met a lot of candidates. There were, you know, several candidates, and it was interesting talking to them. Most of them were, like, in sort of red states, so that was pretty cool talking with them.
Yes.
The most was, you know, I gained a lot more new friends.
Yes, in good context. Well, now, as far as candidates, so it was kind of congressional candidates trying to create that internet blog buzz, if you will. That seemed to be their aim by coming to the convention?
No, they were actually part of a group called the Netroots Nation candidates. They were endorsed.
Yeah.
So they came based on receiving that endorsement. There wasn't like any random people, you know, that weren't endorsed, wasn't there. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So you just couldn't show up and walk around, if you will. Or you could, but you
could, but there wasn't that many. So, I mean, I thought that was really good.
Yeah.
In a candidate. I was just upset that there was only one pick from the South, and he's an incumbent congressman.
Who was that?
Oh, out of North Carolina. Can't think of his name.
Oh, okay, but one of the sitting congressmen from North Carolina.
Yeah, he's a sitting congressman in North Carolina, and they chose him as a Netroot candidate instead of, you know, really spreading the love.
Yeah, I had talked to somebody this week that's starting a PAC, and I told them, my advice to them, and I won't say more about who it is or that kind of thing, but was to try to start a PAC where you only support challengers. Because obviously, you know, incumbents just have the, you know, the benefit of incumbency. Kind of, you know, try to do some resurgent, you know, try to, you know, take back districts, if you will. And, you know, I think that's what you're kind of alluding to. You would like to have seen more districts where we're trying to take it back, if you will.
Well, also, well, I mean, I'd really like to see at least one from the South, even Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, you just can't count. And they only had, out of, I think, 32 candidates, there were four women and two minorities, two African-Americans. Either there was really poor outreach or there was really poor outreach.
Yeah. Well, and sometimes conventions, the convention will be held and people have to, you know, advocate and get at it. I mean, you went out and went to the convention, if you will. I mean,
no, these are candidates that whatever this group is called, Netroots Nation, chose.
Oh, okay.
They chose these candidates. The convention, you know, us convention goers didn't choose these candidates. They were already hand-picked before we even got there.
Yes. Well, and honestly, I mean, you do have to think a lot of swing districts are more likely to be majority white. I mean, a majority minority district's likely to be held, you know, pretty firmly by a Democratic candidate, so it's not going to be one of these take-back situations. I mean, certainly.
Now, there's actually there's two districts in Illinois that are completely Democrat.
Yes.
And, you know, it just didn't show a lot of, for me, it didn't show like there was a wide variety in geographics.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. Well, I hear the airport in the background. Did you get your baggage situation straight? I heard you had a little problems with the TSA. Bernita?
Uh-huh.
Did you got your baggage situation straight with TSA?
No, I'm good. I'm good.
Good, good.
I'm good. So I think it was an interesting convention, and I learned a lot, and met a lot of cool people.
Yes. Well, and while you were up there, did you learn anything new about Georgia politics that we didn't already know?
They don't talk about the South, fellas.
They
want
to talk
about the South?
About Georgia and where we're at.
Huh?
Did they talk to you much about Georgia politics and where we're at? Did you learn anything new about Georgia?
No, they don't talk about the South. Are you,
okay.
You guys aren't, you're really not hearing me. They do not talk about the South. The South is not included. There was one guy, I got him from the Democratic Governors Association, and he sat in our Southern Caucus meeting, he said, because he was not giving up. And that felt really good.
Yes.
So he was a really cool guy. We liked him a lot. And he sat there and he listened, and, you know, it was good. I was really glad to see that he stayed until our convention, because he could have went to any other regional caucus convention.
So at one point they had it broken out by regions and geography.
Yes.
That's good.
We had an hour for each region, and then there was an hour and a half session for local and state bloggers.
Yeah. Now, where's the next convention going to be held? Did they go ahead and announce that? Or?
No, they didn't announce that, and they're changing the name.
Oh, what are they going to change it to? Do they know?
Don't know.
Don't know.
Uh-uh.
Well, I don't know if you know this, but some people feel that the yearly COES convention had an impact on a Georgia election happening in Macon, Georgia. I don't know if you've heard that yet.
Uh-uh.
Yes, the election for the DNC representative happened on Saturday, and Mary Long won by three votes. A very,
yes,
very
this
close
is true.
Race.
This is true, but you're not putting that on the UICO's attendance. I'm just telling you.
No, no. I people was talking about, you know, saying that there was probably 2 to 3 state committee members there.
There was 3 of us there.
Yes.
But I'm thinking there was a whole lot more that was missing it that lived in Georgia and didn't go anywhere.
Oh, certainly, certainly. And I know I don't think anybody begrudged, you know, but it was just interesting that was pointed out, you know. It's like, oh, but because it was, anytime you have a race that's 2 or 3 votes, you can blame anything. I mean, anything.
Yeah, but I'm not owning that one.
Yes, I just...
Because
but,
if anything, we should have did proxy voting.
Yeah, well,
there should be a bylaw in there for proxy voting.
Well, that's not allowed, and who knows how that would all turn out. But
you know, proxy voting would have helped a lot.
Well, it depends on what perspective you are for Bernita.
Huh?
It depends on whose perspective you're talking about there, who it would have helped.
Oh, I'm not... I guess that would be, but, I mean, I was just going with a general fairness issue.
Yes. Well, but I'll just give a kind of general recap of that, the whole election. It started out, you know, we'd heard rumors that Miss Barbara Campbell was going to drop out of the race, but she had not dropped out officially at that point. So people are assuming that she's going to run, and you don't really see any support for her. I mean, and so that's me coming through. Yeah, I don't see a lot of support, so I don't know how this will unfold. Well, she's the first candidate up alphabetically, and she has Linda Edmonds actually make her Linda Edmonds make her nominating speech, and Linda Edmonds had been wearing a Mary Long sticker like 10 minutes before that. So I'm like, that's different. You know, I don't know what to make of this. And then she nominates her another fellow from DeKalb named Don, and I did not catch Don's last name. Did the seconding speech, and then Miss Barbara Campbell gives a nice speech on her background, but then drops out after the speech. Said she does not want to, you know, be divisive and wants to, you know, just have the election there. And I mean, obviously,
oh come on, that was just nothing but drama.
Well, it did make for drama. It made for interesting. I won't say television. It made for interesting viewing. We'll put it that way. So from there, oh, and also before that. There was a lot of discussion over how representative the DNC is, and it was, you know, is there enough African American representation, minority representation? That was a big discussion. But it was, but what's so interesting about it? It seems like the people bringing it up were not in favor of any of the candidates, or did not have, you know, they weren't not have strong allegiances to the candidates. And I talked to some of the candidates and their, you know, their campaign managers, if you will. And they were like, no, we didn't even want that brought up. That wasn't the point.
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying.
I wasn't even there, but got enough emails and phone calls. I'm just saying.
but anyway, so that this gets brought up. But then, of course, I guess in alphabetical order, Paige Gleason is the next person to be nominated, and Lucy Draper of Wayne County nominates her, and Rasheen. Don't know his last name, did not catch that. Actually, he didn't give his name when he nominated, but somebody later told me. Actually, I think Paige referenced him in her speech by first name only from Chatham County, gave the second. She gave her speech. Then Mary Long was nominated by Nikki Randall and seconded by Daryl Morton. And then we had the
You
vote.
Mean to tell me her campaign manager, Mike Hamby, didn't second her?
No, it was Nikki Randall and seconded by Daryl Morton. And but then they had the speeches, and then the vote, and the vote really it had some glitches, and I'm proud to say the 11th district was part of none of these glitches. They had people apparently everybody's ballot. I won't say apparently I knew this. The ballots had the names on it, and you had to hand out the correct ballot to the correct person, and so that caused a little glitch in voting. But they got through that, and they counted the votes, and it was just incredibly close. It was closer than I anticipated, and Miss Mary Long won by 3 votes and 98-95, and she'll be the new DNC chair, rep. And then from there, of course, you know, now that this divisive, what really became kind of divisive, party election was over. Lonnie Plott announced that he's going to finish out his term, but then he is going to not seek re-election, basically starting off a new round. Of DNC rep voting or DNC rep campaigning. Obviously, it won't be as intense as quickly, but I just thought that was exactly what we needed, is not to get a break from this type of politicking.
Wow,
I don't know if you had heard about any of that.
Well, you know, they're all up for re-election April 2008.
They are, certainly. Tim, what you got?
Yeah, well, I was wondering, you were talking about the scenario with Ms. Campbell, and I was wondering if you knew for sure why she got up to the podium and then dropped out.
Drama.
Bernita seems to think it's to add more drama. I don't know that she just, you know, looked at the dynamics of the election and just felt it wasn't her time. I will say this, if you looked at the room, Miss Mary Long had a handout on every bit of the table. Paige Gleason had a handout on every table. There were signs all over for both of them. I think both of them had made at least one phone call to every state committee member. You know, they had really worked it and lined up support hard. I don't know that Barbara Campbell had put in that work, and I guess she saw how much work they had done and didn't realize what position that would put her in until she got in the room.
So it was a simple head count on her part, probably, then.
Well, I mean, you had to look. I mean, if you counted up all the people with either stickers or buttons for each of the two candidates, all the people that didn't, if you got every single one of them, you might not have a third right there.
I see.
So, therefore, yeah. you had to think a lot of people were going to be so wowed by your speech, they're going to rip off the lapel stickers and buttons right there.
Hey, guys, I'm gonna sign off the show, and I'm going to come back on.
Oh, certainly. We're just glad to have you for where we can, and good luck on your flight.
All right. I may come back in 5 minutes, okay?
Certainly.
Okay, great. Bye.
Bye-bye.
But that was the big election. And then, of course, there was some other party news. Matt Wyatt's going to be on the show after 7:30 to tell us about some initiatives the party's doing. But then Jane Kidd made a big announcement. They're going to go ahead and schedule the Jefferson Jackson Day dinner for January 30th, 2008. That's going to be 6 days. It's a Wednesday night. That's going to be 6 days before the Democratic primary in Georgia. And they have invited all of the presidential candidates. Of course, if somebody drops off after Iowa, they, you know, certainly would have no, I guess, reason to come. But still, you're going to have some candidates still left. And they're hoping to get as many as want to come to this dinner on Wednesday. Florida and South Carolina are both going to take place the day before. So if they're in South Carolina or Florida, they just have to stay in Georgia or come through Georgia one extra day, and then they can move on to New York or California, wherever it may be, or Texas, any of those other states to campaign.
And you know, David, I saw Shirley Franklin on television this morning, and you know, Barack Obama was down there this weekend speaking, and she seemed to think that Georgia may be a pretty good sized player in the primary elections after all next year, and so maybe some of these candidates will come. Boy, it would be terrific if you could get just two of them.
Well, Georgia
to this
is certainly the right two, or one of the right two, and Georgia's certainly a top 10 population state. It's kind of a bellwether for the South. And, you know, one of the states in particular, you think New York, I mean, is that really going to be a player in the primary? I mean, Hillary Clinton's approval ratings just go up and up and up as
right.
longer she stays in office there. So you've got to think that she's just got that one locked up to where there's not a lot to do there. That takes that off the table.
Yep.
California is such a big state. You have to have media there. Obviously, you can get some earned media through visits, but you can get out there on Thursday, on Friday. So why not just, like Martin Matheny said in a press release or to the press, they're in the neighborhood, right? You know, speaking,
well,
you know, nationwide.
Well, you look at the other big states, too, and look at the polling in them, and it's pretty obvious that Hillary's having her way right now in Florida. A state like Georgia could be just crucial to the survival of someone like Barack Obama or John Edwards. I mean, just crucial. If they could somehow break through in this state, they could stay in the race.
Yes, I mean, so I would expect to see some of the candidates, you know, maybe not all seven if there's seven at that point, but certainly some. I mean, you've got a few candidates that the biggest expenditure they have is travel, so a chance to get in front of an audience of 2,000, 3,000 folks in Georgia is something they're not going to pass up. Obviously, those aren't the, you know, necessarily the top-tier candidates, but still can create for a good dinner. And also, the ticket prices are going to be lowered, which they're actually going to try to offer tickets under $100. I don't know the specific amount, but still, that's a reduction of almost half. Now, is that going to be the front row center seats? Probably not. And, I mean, if I was running the party and I was trying to pay the bills, I don't know that I would cut ticket prices too much, because the number one goal of the JJ dinner is to raise money.
Absolutely. You know. So why did they come to that decision, do you think?
I think it's just a chance to build momentum, enthusiasm. I mean, one thing that's shown is if people vote in your primary, be it your presidential primary or your other primaries, they're much more likely to come back and vote in the general election for those same candidates that they chose in the primary. So if we can do things to build momentum for the primary, get folks to pick up our ballot in early February, maybe more of them stick and come and pick up, you know, and choose our candidates in November, and that may have a trickle down to some other seats, some of these close House and Senate seats in the State House.
Offering these ticket prices, though, this low, do you think perhaps the state party is trying to reach out to blue-collar folks who might otherwise not be able to afford, you know, to come to a dinner like this?
Yeah, possibly. And I guess if you increase the amount of folks that are in the room, you can make up part of it. And still, certainly, you know, you never know. It could be that the top-end prices maybe go up to $250 to cover some of the, you know, because I think it's $200 a head now is the top and the bottom seat, although they did do a discount for buying them early. You know, I mean, there's ways to make the money work, and I don't know all the specifics to that. That's, you know, I haven't been privy to all that, but you and I certainly know enough about economics and seating that we could figure out ways to recoup some of that by an increased group. And another thing is they said they just want to fill a hall. I don't know that the location has been set, so I don't know what type of venue they're looking at to use. I mean, that could be another thing. If they choose a venue that could hold, you know, 5,000, I mean, I don't know what venue that is. That could be interesting.
Yeah, I was trying to think, though. I mean, you know, some of their biggest dinners have been at the World Congress Center. What could they possibly find that would be a bigger dinner venue than that place?
Well, the place out near the airport that's owned by the City of College Park, it's rather large, and the new World Congress Center room, I've been in the facility. I did not see the dinner, but I mean, I don't know how much you can expand. I don't, you know, go around looking for, you know, layouts of dinner places to know what's possible, but that's obviously a question we can ask Matt. He can... You know, he may not know the answer to that, but we can certainly ask him when he comes on in a few moments with us.
Yeah, it would be interesting to know what venue they might be looking at. That might be why they're offering some more reasonably priced tickets to get more people in there.
Certainly. I don't know. There may be a venue where they could even do no dinner, just listen to the speakers in the back from the back of the room in some type of riser situation for, you know, $30 a head. I don't know. I'm just making things up as I go along. But, I mean, is that a possibility? I don't know why it wouldn't be necessarily.
Well, think about that.
There's no overhead.
Think of something like, for instance, a sports venue that has a lot of grandstands and a lot of floor space as well. Something like the Gwinnett Arena, for instance, that would accommodate all of these tables of $200 customers that want to eat dinner, and a grandstand full of people that just want to hear, you know, some presidential candidates speak and snap some pictures. That might be a good idea.
Yes, and certainly I have no idea what a rent on a place like that would be. I mean, I have no idea, so I don't know how feasible that is to know. I mean, you don't see just every little thing going in the Phillips Arena, the Gwinnett Arena. I mean, those are usually major performers, and so I don't know what the rent is. But that's some things to look at. And a lot of times it's better to come up with outlandish ideas and find out why you can't do them than just assume you can't and never have any innovation.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Very good point.
Well, and I guess while we wait for Martin, I did see a memo come out from James Carville's group. It was released it on their website from Democracy Corps, and it talked about the most competitive House races. I think they picked about 70 to 77 competitive House races, and they don't see any way the Republicans are going to pick up any of these House seats, and that we could even pick up a few. Obviously, not that many are in play, but really, there's no chance the Democratic Party at this point in time is going to lose any ground with the majority in the U.S. House of Representatives. Did you see that document?
Yeah, I'm looking at it as a matter of fact right now, and that does have a Georgia connection to it, David, because you had to figure that the Republicans in their top five targeted races in the country would target, you know, the two close Democratic districts right here in Georgia.
Yeah.
And if they're not in trouble, then where do the Republicans go?
Oh, I don't know. I don't really know where their targeted seats are. I mean, you know that, Marshall, Barrow are two. They'll probably go after Malasaw again in Louisiana, which they lost a ton of ground in that race, just like they did from Jim Marshall when he was in the same district from when he won to when he won re-election. He picked up a huge amount of the vote, and he even still picked up, he and Barrow both picked up votes in areas of their districts that stayed the same. So therefore, I think they're going to become harder to beat as they, build ties in the districts, constituent services. People are more familiar with them and their work. And it's just going to get harder and harder, and maybe they're going to become kind of like Bud Kramer is in Alabama. While the district may look like it could be winnable for the Republicans, people just like the men that are the man that's representing them so much that it's not winnable.
But each man won by such an insignificant margin last year, David, and next year is a presidential race. You do figure the Republican candidate to handily win in Georgia if recent history holds to form. It would just seem inevitable that one or both of those seats would be a prime target. And looking at this data that Carville's group offers, if those two seats are not even in danger, well, the National Party, the National Democratic Party, must be almost giddy at the prospects of picking up perhaps another 20 House seats next year.
Yes, well, I don't know, 20 is realistic, but certainly you can go after that next tier of candidate or seats. Another thing, as far as the party goes, I don't know. I wonder how the party would look at, hey, maybe the way to keep these two seats safe is to really try to do better on the U.S. Senate level. Because my thinking is, if you look at what we did on the governor's race, it was pretty poor, and I'm not blaming that on the statewide campaign. It was just not a good year for us to take it back for whatever reason. Sonny Perdue used some smoke and mirrors to help himself inoculate himself with certain groups of voters that might be swing voters. But that said, if we can actually play a little more offense on the U.S. Senate race, even with maybe not the best candidate or best funded candidate, then that candidate rises a little bit, and that lifts Barrow and Marshall under them some.
Well, also, if it turns out that those two congressional seats are not a problem for us and we're going to hold them, we can turn the whole resources almost of the state party toward Mr. Saxby Chambliss and see what we can do with him.
Well, my thinking is if the National Party could look in whatever they do for Georgia, be targeted toward Chambliss,
right,
then that means that the state party could also spend more time targeting, and maybe it can be a twofold thing. We can use our targeting through, maybe at Chambliss sometimes, but in districts that are winnable, be it
right.
The district here in Rome that Dr. Bob Puckett almost won, the two or three seats in DeKalb. I believe it was two seats. Now this joker Jacob switched. It's three seats, so use it against those seats. The seat in Macon that was very close, there's probably some more. I mean, once you look at a map and look, there's a seat that's in part Gwinnett, part Rockdale. The candidate, George Wilson, didn't have a lot of funding, didn't have a well-developed campaign, but still lost that election by a single-digit number of votes. I mean, not single-digit, single-digit percentage of votes, maybe like 4% without looking at the numbers in front of me. Those kind of seats we can go after and make some real progress on, you know, getting more seats in the state house, the state senate. Because really, if we're going to stop some of this crazy legislation like the, you know, Glenn Richardson's taxes, you know, his plans and these kind of things, we're going to have to put a little fear in the Republicans by winning a few more seats back. Even if we don't take the majority in one term, make progress to where they're saying, hey, we'll lose more seats if we don't do something different. Well, I believe Matt Wyant has joined us. Matt, how are you today?
Good. How are you?
Oh, good to have you on the show. Kind of set everybody up. Matt, you actually requested time on the show because you wanted to let people know about the new plans the Democratic Party of Georgia has for the future. You rolled out a little bit of the executive committee last week, and then yesterday you told the state committee, and you wanted this time to tell everybody that wants to access it on our show. What are some of the new plans for the party?
Well, you know, we talked yesterday about our grassroots Georgia plan, and I'd like to talk about that, but I think the first thing that I wanted to mention was what Jane mentioned yesterday, which is our new date for JJ 2008, which is going to be January 30th of 2008. So we're moving it up earlier in the year, and as I'm sure everyone is aware, it puts it right in the middle of the primaries, a couple of days after the South Carolina primary, and a couple of days before our primary here in Georgia. That's sort of the, what they're calling the Super Duper Tuesday, or whatever the name for it is, the big Tuesday primary session. And so Jane has personally invited and hand-delivered invitations to all of the presidential candidates. Actually, I think all but one. I think Kucinich hasn't yet gotten his invitation, but we've invited all of the Democratic candidates, and we are heard back from several of the campaigns. They're obviously not prepared to commit to any date right now that is, you know, particularly right in the middle of the primaries, but they have it, you know, tentatively on their calendars, and we're asking Democrats all over the state to help us get these are our Democratic candidates to Georgia for JJ08. And so over the next couple of months, we're going to be asking supporters, if you're an Obama supporter, to write a letter to the Obama campaign, send an email to the Obama campaign, call the campaign and tell them that you you want them to be here for our event. Same goes for Clinton supporters and Bush supporters and all of the rest. And so we're going to obviously be working hard at the state party to make sure that that happens, but we're also counting on all of the other Democrats in the state to help us make this event happen. And I think it's a really exciting opportunity to put Georgia back on the map nationally, and to show the importance of the state, and also to show that we're active and we're alive and well in Georgia, and that it's a new day for Democrats, and there's excitement and energy here. And so I think it really has the potential to be a great great event for Democrats. And the other piece of it is that we're envisioning a larger event. We don't have a venue set as of yet, but that's something that we're working on. And we also are planning to lower the ticket prices. We have not set a ticket price yet, but the general admission ticket prices will be under $100. And so I think it's really a great opportunity for all of us here to be a part of a big event to kick off 2008 for Democrats in Georgia. And so, you know, I'm looking forward to working on it. And we're going to need all of the help we can get from Democrats all over the state to help recruit and make sure that your candidate knows that Georgia is important and that we want them here. And I'm looking forward to it. I think it's really exciting. So that's one of the big projects we'll be working on in the next couple of months.
Yes, well, Tim and I I heard it yesterday and mentioned to the show, and Tim and I both had a positive impression of it and had positive thoughts of it for whatever it's worth, and we were doing a little out loud brainstorming, so we're going to ask you about that. What do you think the possibility is of getting a venue, we don't know what venue that is, that would not only have floor seating to do a dinner, but also possibly have, you know, riser-type seating, if you will, that rises, that would not be conducive to serving dinners, but having tickets where people could just pay a reduced rate, listen to the speeches.
Well, that's exactly right, and that's something that we are definitely looking at. I think that's one of the – that sort of was our original idea. We're going to be looking at a lot of different options as far as venues go, and, you know, some of the venues, you know, we have to work with the schedules, obviously, but we've thought about looking at some Coliseum areas and places where we would have floor seating, but we would also have the general admission tickets, which would be in, as you were saying, sort of bleachers or individual seats, but in a stadium sort of setting. And I think that's a real possibility.
Yeah.
And this could be, you know, if we have if we are able to get the candidates down here. I mean, this could be a 15,000 person event.
Wow. And so, if you decided it will be in Atlanta, the state capital, or are you looking at cities outside of Atlanta?
Well, we haven't made that decision yet. I think we are. I think we will obviously be looking at Atlanta. I think there's some logistic things that make it easier to do in Atlanta, as far as getting the candidates there and the location. There are obviously several venues in Atlanta that are possibilities, but we'll look around the state as well, and we'll. There'll obviously be a lot of different factors that play into our decision on where to do the event, but that's a process that we're really beginning now.
Yes, and obviously, I mean, I'm not shilling my own town because we don't have 15,000 seats in Rome. I think 4,000 to 5,000 in the Forum is tops, and so I'm not trying to advocate anything different. I get down to that level.
Well, we did come up with one.
All right,
Gwinnett Arena.
Yeah, no, that's certainly a possibility.
Yes. Well, and so that's exciting, and I'm sure that'll develop over time, although it'll probably be a lot of behind-the-scenes work y'all will be doing, and then we'll begin to really see the details come together, the end of the year around Christmas time. Well,
sure. We are going to be asking, though. I mean, I'd look for stuff coming out of the state park even within the next couple of weeks. Asking folks to contact the campaigns, because that's, I think, really going to be a critical piece of this is, the more voices that we have coming from Georgia, from voters, from volunteers, and from contributors to these presidential campaigns, the more likely it is that we'll get these folks down here. I mean, if you look at some of the money that has been raised by these campaigns out of Georgia, we're talking about significant sums, and so they know that there's a lot of support here for them, and we just need to let them know that this is important to Democrats in Georgia that they be here.
And certainly, I mean, I think all the campaigns could schedule fundraisers, more smaller private fundraisers, right before the dinner to make it more lucrative for them to, do two events or possibly even more in Georgia that day. Obviously, you could do an event earlier and do some earned media that gets you in the Atlanta media market, which covers a huge amount. I think if you look, the Atlanta media market covers one of the widest geographic ranges. It covers more people than a lot of other stations because you have Channel 2 that goes all the way to Waycross, Georgia, even over to other states like Alabama.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, Grassroots Georgia, tell us a little about that.
Well, Grassroots Georgia is the new initiative of the Democratic Party of Georgia, and it's something that I'm really excited about. And it's the vision that Jane brought to the party when she was first elected as chair, and I think it's the team that she's brought in. One of our main purposes for being here is to build the party from the grassroots level up. And so this is the plan that we've been working on since I've been here for the past 2 months now, and even going back before I was actually here. Mike Cantone, the field director, and Ted Terry and Ann Bartoletti on the field team worked on this in some form or another during the 10th congressional race with our direct voter contacts. But we've really been working to create a structure, and it's a work that is still in progress, but I think we've come a long way just in the last 2 months, and there are really a couple of main components that I'll just talk about briefly. The first one is our campaign academy, and we have a couple of, this is really going to help us in a couple of different areas. One is, we really lack a small donor base at the state party, and that's largely because folks have just never been asked to contribute. And so what we plan on doing with the Campaign Academy is starting a paid fundraising canvas where we'll be running 6 days a week, 365 days a year, but 52 weeks a year. And we'll building that canvas team right now. We actually started canvassing on Thursday of last week, and the first night out with three canvassers, and the canvassers averaged $190 per canvasser, and so I believe that was about 12 or so contributors, and we also at the same time were able to ID 30 or so voters. Now that's three canvassers in one night, and actually Thursday was even a short night for us because we were still working on some of the logistics of things. But we plan on growing this project within the next month to 12 to 15 canvassers. Now if you do the math on all of this, you see that this starts adding up to real numbers, and it will hopefully provide us with a solid financial base of small donors for the state party, but will also let us ID voters, talk to voters at their doors about the issues that are important to them. Then the other component of this is a training. We're planning on using this as a training ground that these canvassers will be taught campaign skills and techniques, from candidate fundraising to field management to communications and to just general campaign management. And so that we'll be able to grow and develop our own talent here in Georgia, that they'll be trained directly from the state party, and then we'll actually help place those graduates of the Campaign Academy into campaigns next year and then beyond. And so it will also allow us to better coordinate our local, House and Senate races, but even statewide races and even presidential races, because we will know the staff, we'll have provided the training, the lines of communication will be open, and we'll be able to work directly with these campaigns. And so it's something that we're really excited about, and I think it's a great opportunity also to bring young people in to the Democratic Party of Georgia and to give them actual job opportunities and training and skills, and then even job placement into campaigns. And so I think it's an exciting program, and we're really excited to have it started now and looking forward to growing it in the weeks and months to come. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I was just saying I'm real excited about the training aspect for getting talent in. That's something the Republicans have done with the Coverdell Academy, and we've needed to catch up with for a long time. Now, the door-to-door canvassing to, and then also asking for donations at the same time, I believe, didn't the Clinton-Gore team in 96 use a similar model, I believe, in California and some other places?
They may have. I'm familiar with it because in 2004, the Democratic National Committee began a grassroots fundraising canvassing program nationwide, and it was a project that's still running today across the country. In fact, Atlanta has one of the most successful offices in the country for the DNC as far as canvasser average, nightly average. And so that's a program that they've been doing for about 3 years now. In 2004, I worked on that program, was the regional director in California, running that program and running about seven of those offices. We in California, in the span of about, I believe about 7 months or so, raised over $4.5 million for the Democratic National Committee, and that's knocking on folks' doors, talking to them on the streets. That's an average contribution of probably about 30 $40. So you can see how these numbers add up real quick. And what I'm excited about is that because we're doing this on a local level, that we are actually the state party, and we're canvassing locally, and we have we're doing this whole program in house. We can do so much more with it than just raise money. We can add the voter ID component, where we are IDing voters and adding that information back into our database, that will then be helpful to not only the state party but also to other candidates and campaigns that come on down the road that want to have access to that do have access to our voter file. And so it's really a way to build our information database for the state party as well. And we can also, part of the program is to not just raise money, but also recruit volunteers, and we will pump that information back to the county parties in whatever county it is that we are canvassing in. And so it's also a way to help our county and support our county parties, help them build their own membership and their own volunteers. And so I think it's an exciting way to sort of combine fundraising and volunteer recruitment and IDing voters and talking to folks about the issues that matter to them. It's also a great way to sort of keep our finger on the pulse of the citizens and know what issues are important to Georgians.
Yeah. Well, I was going to ask about the Campaign Academy. What is the timeline of that? Like, when do you anticipate having the first class going? Are you, you know, currently planning the curriculum or the courses or what have you? What's the logistics of those?
We are. The canvas is, you know, as I mentioned, is now started and will be going continuously from here on out. We're developing the curriculum currently, and so that's a component that we'll be adding in as we go along. But we're, in the meantime, we're going to go ahead and begin to recruit and bring on more canvassers and make sure that we keep the canvas running. And then we are in the process of developing the curriculum. And part of that has been settling down our staff and getting more set just at the state party with the staff that we have. Now, you know, as you know, David, we brought on our new finance director just this past week, and we've also brought on a new operations manager. And so as the pieces are now kind of more set, it'll be a little easier, more easy for us to develop the actual curriculum, for example, with teaching folks how to do campaign fundraising is obviously different than doing or candidate fundraising is obviously different than doing fundraising canvassing. And so, but now that we have a finance director, I'll begin working with him on putting together a curriculum for training folks how to do that, as one example. So that's something that we plan on rolling out in the next couple of months here. And the thought is that we want to, you know, have our sort of first group trained up by the end of the year. So obviously, as we move into 2008, we'll start to have trained staff for some of our House and Senate candidates.
Certainly, because I know that's something that's going to happen is, you know, a lot of campaigns that are well-developed will be on the ground and going well before qualifying next April.
Sure, sure.
Yes. Well, Matt, thanks again for joining the show. And once again, anytime you have stuff to share with us, you just get on the Kudzu Vine and let us know about it.
Well, I appreciate it, David.
Yes, and before you go, anything else besides those two very exciting topics to share with us?
Well, the other component of the Grassroots Georgia plan is working with county parties, and that's something that Mike and Ted and Ann have all been working hard on also, and along with Sally Rosser and the congressional district chairs. And that's a piece that we're also developing the curriculum for, but we're also calling that an academy, and it's an academy for our parties where we will go in and work with each county on a one-on-one basis to help them improve, and we and Sally and the congressional district chairs have been working on sort of ratings system to evaluate where the counties are, where each county is. I believe it's a 1-5 scale right now, and so the process would be for a county party that's interested, they can sign up to be a part of the Grassroots Academy. We'll come and we'll do an evaluation with them, figure out where they are on that scale, and then we'll work with them to move them up a level. And I think the goal would probably be to move up a level a year. And as long as the county was able to move up a level a year, they would be eligible for our grassroots grants program, which is money that we'll be raising off of the canvas where we will, that we'll pump back in county parties. Will be small grants for things like postcard campaign or for, it could even be for something like for food and supplies for volunteer activity. But it's I think, a good way for us to engage with the county parties, support the county parties, and help them improve themselves. But also do that not by dictating to them these are the things they need to do, but going in and really working with them on a one-on-one basis to come up with a plan that is right for their county. So I think that's another piece that we're working on developing the curriculum for, and I think that's something that we announced on Saturday, and we'll be looking to sign up the first couple of counties within the next couple of weeks here to begin that program.
That sounds great. Well, thanks again, Matt, for joining us.
Thanks, David.
Okay.
Y'all take care.
Yes. Tim, good to have Matt on again, share him some party information news, and I'm sure more will come out about that, and we'll share it and pass it along. But, Tim, the show's rapidly coming to a close, and I wanted to know if you wanted to go ahead and do your outrage of the week.
Oh, sure. I'll jump right in there. Well, David, this week let's talk for a bit about one of the GOP presidential candidates, a certain Mr. Rudy Giuliani. For quite a long time, Mayor Giuliani ran as a moderate Republican. Indeed, if we hadn't known better, we might have thought that this guy was running for the Democratic nomination. He was pro-choice, pro-gay rights, and pro-gun control. Good stuff for a general election campaign. Problem is, he's running to be the Republican nominee. And last time I checked, GOP primary voters were just a little bit to the right of Genghis Khan. So what happened was, the more voters learned about him, the more his little lead that he had evaporated. And back to the pack he came. How did he react to this? Well, he decided to try to morph himself into a Republican superhero. And now, boys and girls, I give you Rudy, the Democrat's nightmare. He rips and he snorts, and he exposes those Neville Chamberlain Democrats for the weak-kneed pacifists that they are. Why, thanks to Rudy, I now know that if a Democrat is elected president, that every last radical Islamist will dance for joy, or at least that's what he indicated in this morning's debate. Oh, I'm always so delighted when my party is accused of being anti-military by swell guys like Rudy. You know, another brave soul who is a stand-up supporter of President Bush's Iraq war. Of course, like President Bush, America's mayor never sought the honor of combat himself. He left that chore to flip-flopping weakling Democrats like John Kerry. You know something? He wants Republican voters to forget who he really is. Well, let me remind them now. On September 10th, 2001, he was a failed mayor at the end of an undistinguished term. He reinvented himself that next terrible day and was dubbed Mr. 9/11. What a joke that is. He's a social liberal in a party of social conservatives, and now he wants to deny his own beliefs. Anything to get elected, I suppose. And he's a not-so-desirable candidate in a party full of them, according to polls showing lukewarm support. He's all of this, a rumpled man in a rumpled suit. Oh, yeah, and one more thing. When he's in drag, he is absolutely the ugliest woman I have ever seen, David.
Tim, another great outrage of the week, and show's come to a close, but it moved quickly with Bernita talking about the convention and Matt coming on and big news from Macon. Next week, we're looking forward to having Dr. Drew Weston to speak about his book, The Political Brain. See you then.
See you.